Welcome to Semiobites, bite-sized podlog episodes related to theological semiotics.
Hey Terry, how's it going?
Going well, Yanni, and you?
Doing pretty good. You know, it's Friday afternoon, getting ready for Shabbat.
Yeah, it's storming a little bit here where I live, but we need it. It's a bit dry, so a little more rain will be good.
That'd be nice here. I moved here for the rain, and it feels like all I get is the heat waves now.
Oh, well. So what's our topic today?
We had talked about going over the Israel trip. I went to Israel from June 10th to June 17th as part of a adult birthright trip, and I got put in the pluralistic secular tour group, which was a very unique experience.
Right, right. You left right after our advance at Orcus, right?
I had like 4 days. I got back from the advance, 4 days to catch up for work, and then I took off, spent a weekend over in the Five Towns near Long Beach, which was an amazing Jewish experience, and then went to Israel for a week.
I see. Okay. The Five Towns? What's that?
So there's five towns there. Like two of them, for example, is Far Rockaway and Lawrence. And it's these five towns that have kind of merged into their own borough, so to say. And they have their own Five Towns government and Five Towns newspaper and regulations and everything.
I see. Okay. And
I guess the best comparison is actually Portland's a great example. I live in Portland as far as my zip code's concerned, but I'm in Hillsdale, which is part of Portland.
Right. Well, New York is five boroughs.
Yeah. So, you know, if there was a sixth borough, I'd probably be Long Beach.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Did you have any questions about my trip?
Well, logistically, was it a smooth travel? Easy getting there? Easy getting back?
For the most part, there were definitely a couple hangups, and that's just because I haven't traveled very much. You know, this is my second airplane trip in 6 years.
Wow, so, that is light.
Yeah, and that's my fourth airplane trip in my whole life. So I don't get on the plane a lot. And so
Wow. That
was actually a fairly smooth experience. But then I had to figure out how to take transportation and everything, and that had a few more hiccups. Rush hour in New York is nothing like rush hour where I live. So that was eye-opening.
If I remember correctly, you said you had a layover in New York for a night or two?
Yeah, I arrived a Friday morning, and then I left Sunday morning. So I had a two-day layover, and that was really wonderful. That trip, those 2 days, were actually almost, I think, just as influential as my Israel trip as far as how it impacted me.
And as I recall, you told me you would be staying with an Orthodox Jewish family or some kind of lodging and caretaking that would be not like just staying in a Days Inn motel or something.
Correct. Yeah. I went and checked in with the Orthodox family that was hosting me. We've got some connections at the shul I attend with a lot of family in New York, so they're able to set that up. And it was a wonderful experience. They're a very sweet family. It was as far as Portland standards go, the family would be considered Haredi, but I definitely don't consider them Haredi, like ultra-Orthodox. They're very friendly, easy to get along with. The guy's an attorney. His wife does shidduch, so that's a term you're probably not familiar with. Within the Orthodox Jewish scene, we don't do dating. We do shidduch. It's arranged marriages.
Uh-huh.
And that's even for adults. So, for example, she keeps lists going, and then when a guy contacts her or a girl contacts her, says, I'm looking for a spouse, and here's what I'm looking for. She connects them together. They go on one or two coffee dates, and then they get hitched.
I had heard that there was an Orthodox Jewish version of arranged marriage, but I didn't know the word for it, and I didn't know the details. That's interesting.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. I was able to stay with the family. We attended the white shul, which is not anything racist. It's just called white shul because the building's white. And that was really cool because for me, as far as my dissertation goes with Yibrit, building bridges concept, that's really wonderful because you had every single style of Jewish observance there. You had Chabad davening next to Yeshivish, which is a big division where I'm at. And you had a the Sephardi and the Sephardic and the Ashkenaz, they're all davening together. And it was really amazing to go. And I actually attended two Sephardi sessions. So Friday night Kabbalah Shabbat with Sephardi, and then Shabbos morning with Sephardi. The shul I go to where I live, it's an Ashkenaz shul that davens out of a Sephardic sitter. So they call themselves a synagogue for all Jews. And it's a blend, but Sephardi is more ethnic and very much more lively. And so I got to have a very musical enjoyment of the pleasure and the experience. Everybody was dancing around in circles, they were singing, clapping their hands, moving. And then when I went to Israel, that following up Shabbat, Friday night, we were at the Kotel, the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall. And so Friday night, I got to see that welcoming in Shabbat and everybody dancing together, whether it was Reformed Jews or Haredi Jews, they're all together, all dancing, celebrating the bringing in Shabbat. And for me, that really inspired me, because working on my dissertation where I'm at, it's kind of hard with this concept of building bridges when not a lot of people are like, well, that's nice, but we're really not too concerned with that. And then seeing places that do have those bridges built told me, yeah, this can be done.
Well, now this was two different Fridays. It was the Friday in New York, and then you had an almost identical or very closely related experience in Jerusalem. Is that right?
Yes, that is.
I see, on those two Fridays.
Yep.
I see. That's cool. There's a resonant harmony there that's really powerful.
Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, if I need to go to Israel, but I can't make it overseas, I just need to head over to Long Beach.
That makes good sense, actually. I mean, it's way... You have to go wherever you find that resonance with the divine. And it you know, it's a moving target. Sometimes it's in nature alone. Sometimes it's in a community ceremony like what you described. Sometimes it's in a, you know, an overwhelmingly semiotically tidal wave of just experience in community. That sounds really good, though. It's interesting. It sounds like the Jewish community has built bridges among its different, I don't want to say divisions, or sects or
denominations.
Groups. Denominations. Okay. You've built bridges among those denominations, or at least ways that there are bridges that allow them to come together.
Yeah.
I don't see that. Maybe I just miss it. Maybe it's there and I just don't see it. I do can tend to kind of live a hermit life, but I'm not aware of any bridges of that caliber persisting in the Christian community. Were you when you were a practicing Christian?
I think it really depended. I mean, there are some places, most of my Christian life, in fact, all of it was in Bend, Oregon, so Central Oregon. That's a desert there. 10% of the city is Christian, but there's so many different churches, and each church, you know how it is. Well, I think that we should do this. And the other person says, well, I think I should do that. And then it's two different denominations. That's right. Very much the case for a lot of the churches there, but I did see some churches that were really, no, let's work together. And when I got involved in the church leadership and politics in Central Oregon, there was this concept of gatekeepers, and every church actually networked. So there was a committee, so to say, of different pastors that were the gatekeepers for the Christian community as far as what happened and didn't happen to coordinate with all the different churches. So from the lay person, you see all these churches and these divisions, but from the upper echelons of the pastor, you see that they're working together to make sure they're not missionizing each other or stealing congregants or infighting.
I see what you mean. I found kind of the same thing when I started peeling back the layers of the onion, looking behind the curtains. I saw the same kind of thing. Above the laity, there was a kind of collaboration among leaders that sustained a community of churches as operational religious entities, but I didn't see any real effort to build bridges among the laity in the many denominations, you know, where you had, say, Baptist and Episcopalian and Catholic Bible study groups that would get together. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just didn't see that kind of thing happening. Every church I went to had their own subculture of home groups and study groups and Bible study groups and so on, but they never went outside their denominational boundaries. And if they did dare to do that, it tended to, pique the ire of the leadership.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm sorry, back to your trip. So you flew from New York to Israel directly, or what?
Yes, we took El Al, and partially as a social experiment, I dressed, actually how I dress now, I black and white. And so I dressed in the black and white to show up at the airport just to see how the group would respond, because I heard birthright groups, they're not exactly Orthodox, and that's the case. But I was lucky. I got partnered with an Orthodox staff member, an Orthodox tour guide. So there's three staff, the one tour guide and two staff, and two of them were Orthodox. And they knew who I was, and they recognized me. But as far as when I showed up, everybody thought I was just going to Israel, and they didn't think I was part of their group. And then when I kept tagging along with the group to different things, it was like, oh, he's part of this group. But as long as I wore the black and white, nobody wanted to talk to me. As long as I looked Orthodox or looked frum, which is observant, nobody really felt comfortable interacting with me. And so I changed.
Wow.
So that was definitely an interesting experience. And I kind of set the tone for the week, because it was like, oh, he's the Orthodox guy. And interactions with me were a little hindered because of that. Which,
Really?
yeah, I
That's
mean,
interesting. That's kind of an opposites there, where on those two Fridays you had exactly the opposite kind of experience, and yet in what more social and cultural settings there was a kind of, I won't say ostracism, but distancing taking place.
you there?
Yeah, did you hear my question, or did it come across?
No, it cut
Oh,
off for a
okay.
few seconds there.
All right, we do have a severe thunderstorm here. You may hear it in the background, but anyway, I guess what I was saying was, on the two Fridays, the one in New York and then the one in at the Western Wall, you had similar experiences where those denominational boundaries were lax, if they were present at all. And yet you're saying that when you were there in Israel, if I understood you correctly, you were saying there were these in more relaxed, less structured or formal circumstances, some kind of, not quite ostracization, but at least a kind of distancing seemed to be taking place because of your orthodoxy. Is that right?
Yeah, to a bit. It was actually, semiotically, it was very rich. And then as far as building bridges, it was rich too. Because I look at it and I say, the Orthodox, they have these opinions, right? But then when I talked with individuals, they, like, here I was, I felt shunned. And when I talked with a couple of individuals that I got roomed with and got some insight, they were like, well, we have this perspective of Orthodox, and you've shattered everything we thought about it. So
Good for you.
there's this concept where we both have these preconceived notions, and I remember that in Christianity as well. And I think that's even the political landscape today, the left versus the right, there's preconceived notions of each other that prevent people from being in the middle.
Well, that's a whole can of worms I'd rather avoid for this conversation.
Fair enough.
So what, a little more just in terms of itinerary, what were the highlights of places you visited and the experiences you had there?
Yeah, so it was a, again, pluralistic tour, so they tried to include a variety of things. So we left Sunday afternoon, and then between how long the flight is and the time changes, we arrived in Tel Aviv at 5:30 a.m. And I get off the plane, and the tour guide says to me, if you need to do your morning prayers, go do it right now. You've got 20 minutes. There's a corner in the airport. And so I'm over there, and I get my talis out, and I'm doing all the prayers, and rushing through best I can to have it meaningful, yet at the same time fit 20 minutes. I just break down because there's a part where we get to our these 19 blessings we say, where I'm saying this blessing over being in the land of Israel, and I'm there in the land saying this,
Yeah.
and it just connects with me in that moment. And I try not to be an emotional guy, but here I am crying in the airport while praying.
Oh, my
So
goodness. That had to be a highlight.
that was definitely good. It was a good experience.
Well,
And then
would you describe them as tears of joy?
just crying. Like it's like something was just released inside. Not I wasn't happy or sad or anything. It was just this connection, I guess.
Almost like a homecoming.
Maybe I think my homecoming experience was more when we were leaving, but more of a I've been looking for a breakthrough, and there's that breakthrough.
I see. Okay. A moment of orthodox epiphany. if that's yeah, not a paradox.
in my life at home, I'd be dealing with all these issues with work and just fighting for the ability to observe Shabbat or fighting for the ability to attend service on Yom Kippur. And then here I am in the lands and being Jewish, whether it's by religion or by ethnicity, is a given. And in a lot of the cities, kosher is, oh yeah, this is kosher. Now the question of gluten-free. I don't have to worry about both at the same time.
Yeah, that's terrific.
And so then from there,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, just a couple of the other highlights, like places we went to. We went to Haifa, and we went to Beit HaGeffen, which I reference in my dissertation. Beit HaGeffen is an intercultural center that's working on peace between Jews, Arabs, and Christians on a cultural level, not on a religious level. And so I got to go to this city where they're actually trying to do this type of relationship thing. And one year, Christmas and Hanukkah and Ramadan all lined up. And so they do all, they mixed all three of the celebrations together, and they had a parade that involved different parts of all three together. So you had a Santa character that was doing things in an Arabic and Jewish way. Which I know Santa's not necessarily the epitome of Christian Christmas, but for a lot of non-Christians, I think that's the assumption.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Boy, that had to be a semiotic feast.
Yeah, we did what's called the Museum Without Walls. So you could just see art on the walls and everything. And there's this one where there's this paperclip that's bent out of shape to look like the Jordan River, and it doesn't close. And it's, you can't close it. And the idea is that when it's closed, we'll finally have peace between the people. We'll never have that. Yet, at the same time, it casts a shadow on the wall. So at a certain time of day, the shadow closes the paperclip.
Oh, that's neat.
Saying that one day in the future we'll have this, but right now it's not here.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and then from there we went and stayed on a kibbutz. That was an interesting experience. It's a kibbutz is a community that they all do different jobs within the community to provide for the community, and so they're semi-isolated in that capacity. And then from there we went. So see, that was Monday. So Tuesday and Wednesday, Thursday. Between those days, we tackled going to Sfat, which is a spiritual center of Kabbalah. And I got to tell you now, next time I go to Israel, I have to spend days there because it's just, it doesn't do it justice just to go for a couple of hours. It's
oh, with that one so place, you mean?
Yeah, it's there's so much history. There's so many miracles that happen in Sfat. They're actually recorded in history books. And just the spiritual connection, that's where Kabbalah, a couple hundred years ago, that's where you have all these leaders that form Kabbalah. They're all there at the same time studying together, and it was just this mystical city.
Interesting. Any other soul level experiences that you can bring back?
You know, I wanted the Kotel to be more than experience, and we were there for Friday night, and I did my evening prayers while touching the wall, and I was looking for this emotional let's get into this thing, and it didn't happen. And afterwards, people were like, well, how's that for you? I'm like, I don't know yet. I don't know. And then it took me time to process. And what I was able to think through it and process it. And I think this rings true as a comparison to Christianity a lot, too, is we go with these expectations of what we want from our session with God. What do we want out of prayer? What do we want out of worship or whatever we call it? What do I want to get from davening? And that's the wrong approach. So
right.
Davening, we've talked about it before, there's three set prayers a day. I can pray as many times I want a day in whatever language I want, but there's three set times to pray a day in Hebrew with certain words that you say, and those have replaced the sacrificial system so that the prayer of our hearts are the sacrifice of our lips.
Okay.
And if I recognize that, I say, here I am at the wall doing davening, saying, God, what are you going to give me for this sacrifice? When instead I should be saying, God, this is a sacrifice for you. It doesn't matter what I get from it. I'm giving it to you.
I want it kind of turns the Wailing Wall into a flea market. flea market with God at the stall, right?
A lot of people do go there looking for what they can get. And I went to realize what it is I need to give.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent point. And I have to say, it has a convicting resonance for me because I know it's very difficult for me to put aside not just my agenda, but to go deeper and put aside my identity apart from those moments of prayer and those moments of seeking. It's the freedom to set myself aside so that what in Christianity we refer to as those groanings of the spirit, right? Those unutterable sighs and groanings of the spirit that give prayer its life. Those are few and far between and hard to get to. And the key that unlocks it, if any such key exists, is taking myself out of the equation.
That's a bit hard to remove your ego from it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the ego that's the biggest stumbling block. And then you fall into your fears and your id and your uncertainties and doubts if you're not careful. But just finding that what we're trying to build, Yoni, right, is that shalom, that peace, that connectedness where all those kinds of differences fall away and you become one with the divinity. And that's an easy thing to say, but it's an impossible thing to, we don't make it happen. We just have to be available and prepared when it does, I think.
Very true. And I guess that's the core definition of Kabbalah, is just finding that connection.
Welcome in it, always being ready to welcome it.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks. That's a very helpful explanation.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me more. What else along the journey was memorable to you looking back?
There's one day, crazy day. So after we finished up in Swat and everything, we went to a winery, and then we finally made it all the way over to Kfar Hanafdin. And Kfar Hanafdin is a Bedouin settlement, and it's very much a tourist trap. They have you ride camels, they have you get their food, they tell you about how they do coffee and tea, which their coffee and tea is amazing. But here we are, we're wandering the desert without lights, in the dark, using the guide dog to make sure we don't find scorpions. And we stop, and we all spread out so we can barely see each other, but we're alone in the dark. With all that's above us is a canopy of the stars. Wow. And at that moment, I come back to that moment in Torah when Abraham looks at the stars and God speaks to him and says, Abraham, your descendants will be as many as the stars. Yeah. And I recognize I'm looking at the same sky, the same style as what Abraham was doing that night in the desert.
Wow. And it must have been just, there's a line in the movie and play Lion in Winter where Peter O'Toole, that's one of my favorite movies, and Peter O'Toole comes down from the parapet up in the castle. And his queen is there, and she says, where were you? And he talked about where he was, and he says, the sky was pocked with stars. And I can, in my mind's eye, I can imagine being in a place that dark where that much of the light in the sky would have been visible. Must have been impressive.
You know, as far as, like, the canopy itself, it was a moving experience because of being in the same spot as Abraham. But you've been to Oregon, and you know what types of night sky we can get outside the city where there's so many stars.
True. Yeah.
You could see maybe half of that when in Israel.
Really?
And I think, the moon's out, so that makes a huge difference. So,
yeah, that would. Yeah.
So we come back, we do a bonfire, we hit the sack around in our communal tent at about 1 in the morning, and then we wake up at 4 a.m. So 3 hours of sleep. We wake up, we hop on the bus, and we drive to the base of Masada. And then we hike up Masada to watch the sunrise.
Wow.
So we're at Masada. All these tragedies in Jewish history have occurred here. And we get all these stories. And then I have to hike down the mountains, which is so much more hard. Because the way up, we took the Roman road, which is an engineering marvel of what the Romans did. It took them 3 years to build it. But it's an okay path. And on the way down, we take the snake trail, which is barely any handrails, steep, enough space for one person. And to the side, there's a cliff. Definitely not ADA compliant.
Wow.
And that takes about an hour. At the bottom, I was like, you know, if I had to go any farther, I might have just rolled off.
That had to be pretty hair-raising at some point.
Oh, definitely. And I'm not a heights person at all. So then from there, we went to Ein Gedi. And Ein Gedi, I didn't know about until we got there, and I regret that. And I read Tehillim, and I try to read Tehillim every day, which is the Book of Psalms, what David wrote. Ein Gedi is where the king, where King David hid from Saul for years. And it's this oasis in the middle of the desert, and there's mountains, and you can, and it's this nature reserve now, so you can walk alongside ibex, and it's just this amazing thing where there's a little mini waterfall you can stand in. I'm like, this is where David was, and he hid in the cave and everything, and it was cool to experience that. And then after that, we went to the lowest point on Earth, and that was the Dead Sea.
Right.
And so for the Dead Sea, it's the lowest elevation you could get on Earth. And it's, the Dead Sea has so much salt in it. It's the Dead Sea because that's where everything pours, and that's where the Jordan River goes to. Nothing leaves it. So it just collects. I don't want to know what it collects, actually. But you can float on top of the water almost. Like, I sat in that lotus position, and I was just bouncing there and didn't go below half my chest. It was amazing.
Wow.
And then from there, we went from the lowest point on Earth to the highest spiritual center of the world, which was Jerusalem.
That's fascinating. That's impressive. Well, that had to be an amazing journey.
It was an amazing experience. And honestly, if somebody hasn't gone, they need to go. And if you're looking for semiotics, you need to go to Sfat. The synagogue there is riddled with images, and each image has something that's signifying, intentionally designed. And so it's literally the synagogue of semiotics.
Well, it's on my bucket list. Peggy has been. She went to Israel on a Christian tour.
Yeah.
And it was a key, pivotal kind of experience for her. She went with our daughter, Leanne. They went with Leanne's church. But we had an advance or something, and I couldn't go, couldn't have gotten away anyway. But I did put it on my list to go back with her, maybe with both of them one day. And what I would want to do is not just go for one tour. I think I'd want to go and stay longer, and I'd want to take both, if I, as a Gentile Christian, would be allowed to take both a more Jewish-oriented view tour and take the Christian-oriented tour as well, so I could put the two together, think of them both, and see what, you know, where are the harmonies? Where's the resonance here?
Well, I'll tell you this. There's a tour guide there named Yoni, which isn't me, but he's over there, and he's this amazing guy. He is my tour guide. And if you're ever over there looking for a Jewish perspective, he will gladly show you the place.
Good. I'll get back to you on that, because I do hope to go once this doctorate program is behind us, and hopefully I can get back into a little better financial position and be able to take the time to take a trip like that.
Yeah.
Send questions, comments, and suggestions to semiobites@gmail.com. Semiobites is a podcast co-hosted by Yidbrick and Semio City to answer Semitic questions via Semiyak analysis by addressing misunderstandings to build a bridge of shalom between Judaism and Christianity. Semiobites is a component of the Track 2 dissertation process at Portland Seminary for Jonathan Esterman and Terry Rankin. Musical consideration provided by bensounds.com.